And we're back on the Rule of Three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. I'm Tim Slagle, and over on the other side, as always, Mr. Ben Washburn.
Hello, Tim. Hi, everybody.
Hey. We're going to be talking later in the show. We're going to be talking about the flavors of gummy bears.
Absolutely.
That's a nice winter day topic. We are going to be talking about generic drugs. Is that apparently there's another scandal where a drug manufacturer, where an evil drug manufacturer is about to rape dying people by charging more money.
I think he is, actually, or she. Or who. I think they are. I think this is a legitimate evil person. I really do.
Well, we'll get into that in a bit. Yeah. But right now, it's for our loyal fans who might have thought by now that the podcast has been thrown overboard, so to speak.
Yeah.
Wondering where Ben and Tim have been. Actually, we were both at sea.
Yeah, we were.
You were a little longer than I was. You actually had a 4-week gig of entertaining people on a cruise ship, and I spent a week over Christmas just enjoying a cruise ship. I did not make it to the comedy show.
You didn't make it. The comedian.
I did not support the comedian. No, it was just. It was just family stuff, and it's other stuff to do.
Yeah,
it's dinners, and then you know, of course, Christmas presents and it's stuff like that. So it was more of a family event, and I highly recommend a Christmas cruise if you want to get the family together for two reasons. Number one, you can't get away from your family.
Yeah.
It's impossible. No matter how big the boat, you're going to be bumping into your family.
Is that
so
a recommendation point?
What? That you can't get away from your family? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you should be forced to spend holidays with your family. One, two, three maybe days a year that you should be forced into a room to spend a long time with your family.
I guess
that's,
so.
I am totally in favor of that idea. And the other thing that's really nice is that the cruise, essentially, the fact that you're out at sea, essentially takes people's phones away from them.
It really does.
So people are not sitting around the dinner table staring at their phone.
Yeah.
It's $20 a day or something like that.
Even more.
And people will not know. It's the freeness of the phone. That's what it is that makes it intrusive into any sort of family event. And so it's I did try 1 year. I bought a cassette case, an old cassette case. For those of you who remember cassettes, they're briefcases. Yep, and they're velvet lined with little slots that actually fit cell phones very nicely before they went into the plus sizes. And the Galaxy 112. They would fit very nicely in a cassette slot. And I passed around the briefcase and asked everyone to put their phone in there, and which I would lock it and put it in the closet until after Christmas dinner.
Oh.
And I did that. And boy.
Fights. Immediate fights.
Woo! You would have thought I was putting them in handcuffs.
That's what I would have thought. What do you mean? That's the high end. That's what you compare all else to. Yeah, you don't take that away.
Yeah,
I found on the ship, people will stare at their phone and complain about it being slow and not working. That's what I saw lots of people do with their phones. This isn't working. This is taking forever. This costs so much. It's not working. Yeah, it was something they could complain about, how it didn't work as quickly and as cheaply as before.
Huh.
That's what I saw.
Huh. Well, yeah. It's how much are you paying per hour to be on that cruise?
Ooh, no kidding.
I mean, it's got to be close. It's got to be close to something like $100 an hour.
Yeah.
That you're. I'm not going to do
that. Not that much.
It's $10 an hour. $10 an hour to be on a cruise.
You're paying it to be there, and then you're just staring at that phone and.
Right, which you could have been doing anywhere.
And checking back to see how many likes you got of the photo of you on a cruise. Hey, do you like me on my cruise? What are you doing on your cruise? I'm checking this post. That's what I'm doing of me in the sunshine on the beach, just to see how much.
We had an interesting port of call. We actually stopped in Cuba. It was
that's interesting.
My mom and I had the idea that that too many of the grandkids voted for Bernie Sanders, so we
yeah, let's get it, take them over and show.
So we thought we would take them over and show them, and it was for some of them it was enlightening. It was it was stuff that if crazy Uncle Tim had told one of the nieces or nephews about this stuff, they would have just rolled their eyes and just, oh, there's Uncle Tim going conspiracy again. But
no.
Yeah, when a Cuban citizen, actually said that last year when Castro died, they were all jubilant, but they were afraid they would be put in prison if they even smiled.
Yeah, about it.
Then suddenly, it's like, wow, that isn't a nice place, is it?
No, it's they attacked our diplomats with some sort of sound weapon. That was just recently they were doing that.
Yeah. There's dispute on that. Of course they do. Cuban denies it, but a lot of people in Cuba who know their government, we would ask them about it. They would deny it. This was kind of funny. We were at the we went to the Hotel Nacional. Of course, I'm not thinking that all the hotels are owned by the government. We went to see a review, which I have to say, I have never seen the rise of communism depicted with fruit headdresses, feathers, and pasties before.
Really? That's what they did? They sexed it up?
They inserted the government the standing of the government in it. And one of my nephews says, "Oh, why did they have to do that?" I go, "Hello, it was produced by the government." And you go, "Oh." it's all done in song and dance. The Spaniards coming in and slaughtering the Indians, and then the Afrin bringing the slaves over, and then the gangsters taking over. All in song and dance and magnificent
half
costumes
naked.
With headdresses and half
like
naked.
It.
Oh, that's my great. Gosh! With dance routines, it was unbelievable.
Without the clothes, only like the intentionally without the clothes, like not because there were none at the store, but because
it was intentional. It was intentional. It was
interesting.
And there was somebody there. There was someone. The guide was saying, "Oh, someone's getting sick over there." It was someone was actually. I go, "Wow,
that's interesting."
I think it's a sonic attack. And he just went pale. He just glared at me and just went completely pale. I just said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I was making a joke." He goes, "There are some things that are not to be joked about."
Really. Is that what he
said?
It was
scary.
You developed headaches and nausea 10 minutes later. Yeah, this is weird. There's several dogs sitting by you dropped dead, and then you had nausea and headaches. That's so crazy.
I learned something as I was doing. So I've been doing a bit for years about if there was hungry people in America, you wouldn't see anyone feeding bread to the birds. You wouldn't see birds.
Oh yeah, yeah,
I said there's no stray animals in Cuba. Well, I have to correct that.
there's tons of them. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, are there stray animals in Cuba? there's no one claims ownership of animals in Cuba.
I gotcha. Yeah. In other words, no, you fend for yourself.
Yeah, seems like they're all stray animals in Cuba, and they're that has been rectified. It was
drop that out of your act immediately. But that sounds fascinating. To see Cuba is fascinating. I mean, I'm
how are you seeing on the cruise?
Not at all. I took off on the cruise, left my glasses. I woke up late. I popped out of bed. We gotta go. I had an hour to get to the airport. At most, and actually, I had to change flights so that I could take my luggage with me. and I left my glasses. So I spent 4 weeks not being able to see stuff, which when it's amazing how convenient it is to be able to see where you're going before you get there. I would walk like I'd have to walk, you know, a couple hundred yards, get to a building. Oh, I can't buy Pepto-Bismol here, you know. This is a shoe store or whatever. There's no beer here. This is a whatever. Yeah, I couldn't see. I couldn't read any of the signs. It was awful.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. So it's going into a beer store to get your shoes fixed.
Yeah, it doesn't work out too well. actually, that does work out fine. If you go into the bar, you're like, okay, well, we'll just wait here. That resolves itself. But if you need a beer and you go to the shoe store, that doesn't.
Did they have like in the shop there? Did they have like reading glasses or something? Could you compensate?
I had reading glasses, yeah, which help a little bit. But I don't really need the reading glasses. I need the farsighted glasses. So I was just wandering around, just victim. I became a victim. I spent $150 on what is normally a $1,000 jar of what turns out to be hemorrhoid cream for your face. I don't know if you've ever had that skin tightening cream crap. I bought some of that. I did that.
Huh.
Just. Huh. That's a different
story. Because you couldn't see? There's a different
story. It
affected
my intelligence. I even know the whole term. Oh, they're anchoring. They're showing me it's $1,000. It's not that much. I still dropped the money. It's a whole different story. We'll have to get into that. It was some other time.
And we will, because I think we're out of time.
We are out of time.
Back on the Rule of Three. In the third segment, we're going to be talking about gummy bears.
My favorite.
Fruity, little, cutesy gummy bears. But right now, we've got a more serious issue. It's an article that Bent sent me while we were both out to sea.
Yeah.
Is that apparently prices for a cancer drug called Lomustine have skyrocketed nearly 1,400% since 2013, putting a potentially life-saving treatment out of reach for patients suffering from brain tumors and Hodgkin's lymphoma. Though the 40-year-old medication is no longer protected by patents, no generic version is available.
Yeah.
Sold for years under the brand name Sinu, which to me sounds like an alien from a science fiction
film.
Seems
strange. But, yeah, I guess they're running out of mouth sounds to make that don't mean something else. You know, you got to get inventive. Yeah.
At a price about $50 a capsule for the highest dose. The drug maker sold Lomustine in 2013 to a little-known Miami startup called NextSource, which proceeded to hike Lomustine's price 9 times since. It now charges $768 per pill for the medication.
Wow. Jeepers, that's just cold. Yeah. That is cold. That is just cold.
Well, it seems
no,
that
it
way.
Is that way. When something seems cold blooded, it is. I mean, cold blooded only operates in the world of seems. It is, you know what I mean?
I have no idea what trouble, how much work though it takes to synthesize Sinu. I don't know the market for Sinu. I don't know how many pills you can expect to sell a year.
You know that it only costs 60-something bucks a pill to synthesize Sinu. And that it's not like the ingredients shot up that high. And it's not like labor shot up that high.
No, but that was Bristol-Myers Squibb that was able to produce Sinu for $50 a pill. I mean, they've got the infrastructure already there. They just said, can you do a run of Sinu on machine number 12 over there?
Oh, so you think this new guy is they just wanted to start up the factory on Sinu with all new equipment and everything?
Probably, yeah.
That's what's going on. That it's just some guy in his garage.
That would be my guess. And also, you know, Bristol Myers can say, you know, they can say, you know, we're only selling five of these pills a year. It's we should probably, you know, which is probably why they disbanded the line. and it's, you know, it's a, you know, $250 a year, or okay, I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
But how many of the pills are they selling? What's the market? Are there other pills that actually do the same thing?
What company took it over? Next Source Biotech.
Next Source. Next, yeah, Source. It's a company in Miami. So it's a small startup.
It's a couple of storage units trapped together. But that does, you know what I mean? They just duct tape.
They got a bunch of Cuban immigrants sitting in there with a little little pill stamper, just working away.
That is a possibility. It might not just be pure evil. It might just be complete apathy and indifference on the part of Bristol Myers, just saying, "Well, we don't make money off this anymore. We're not doing it." So it doesn't make money.
Yeah, we're not making, right, exactly. We're not making money, so we're not going to do it anymore. And NextSource says, oh, we think we can make money off of it. They go, okay, fine. Yeah, here, it's yours. You know, just sign right there. Patent's yours. And NextSource says, oh, we're going to have to charge about $700 a pill. And it's like all of a sudden, oh, evil people. It's, you know, I'm sorry, the pill is still being made available. I mean, that's, right now, you know that you cannot get coral snake anti-venom in the United States.
Oh, yeah. That's
interesting. Were you aware of this? If you get bit by a coral snake in the United States today...
You're just out of luck.
Yeah. It's like the old joke about a rattlesnake is a doctor says you're going to die.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to do the setup on that one.
Yeah, you don't.
They make coral snake venom in Mexico, but the FDA will not allow Mexican coral snake antivenom to be sold in the United States.
Yeah, that is a possibility. But then what it raises is the question of, are there times, and I think there are, when if you just leave it up to the invisible hand, that invisible hand slaps the crap out of you. And there are points where you're probably a good idea to say, hey, this is where we use government. This is where we actually do come in and try to adjust or fix, or, you know, especially with some of these generics that don't make any money, that it might be a good idea to set something up.
Well, the problem, though, you see, here's the problem. The problem isn't that the government isn't fixing it. The problem is that the government has already fixed it. It's a generic drug. It's been on the market for 40 years. There's no reason why the FDA has to re-regulate it. The FDA has to say, oh, we have to make sure that your generic is
up to
snuff. Yeah, there's no reason why they should have to do that.
Assuming that the FDA is the reason that that's happening. It might not be. It might just simply be, like you said, setting up a factory.
No, I think further down in the article, or maybe not. It's the drug's there. The drug's out there. So why aren't other people?
But that's the point of what you're saying. Is it just simply?
Okay, here we go. Here we go. According to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is offering to expedite the regulatory review process for more than 300 drugs like Lomestine that lack generic competitors, all their patents have expired. So there you go. That's it right there. That's admission.
They're saying we might. They're saying we're offering. We will make this quicker. In other words, what's happening?
We'll offer to expedite,
and people aren't taking them up on the offer because there isn't money in it. I guess that's as simple as that. It doesn't make enough money. I sat by a guy on the plane once who was talking about he worked for Dow Chemical when they came out and made DDT illegal, and they were happy. Dow was very happy because the patents were up on DDT. It made them no money. And they had all these very expensive alternatives just waiting on the shelves. So as soon as that happened, they were like, great, sweet. We don't have to make this anymore. And they shifted over to more expensive chemical.
Sure. Sure. But the thing is, if you're making $768 a pill, and it can be made cheaper, if your assumption is that they're just price gouging and they're charging far more than it's actually worth – why wouldn't an upstart then manufacture it and sell it for $368?
Yeah, well, it's that initial hurdle. It's the initial hurdle. I really suspect that someone's making a killing right now off that drug. and that, as you say, the hurdle of the FDA and the regulation keeps it makes the entry too difficult or just not something that
right.
And
right.
Furthermore,
it essentially establishes a monopoly.
And, yeah, and furthermore, if Bristol Myers starts making it again, they'll just close up shop and leave because the profit won't be in the drug there anymore to make the easy profit. So it does set up either way, whether there's gouging or not. There's a situation we have where gouging could definitely occur. My personal thing is, if someone can gouge, they will get away with it. If it's legal to charge $20 for a gallon of gas during a hurricane evacuation, people have been known to do that. They don't mind at all.
But the thing is, at least you have gas.
Well, yeah, but you're also out, $400 a gallon.
Well, no, you said 20.
Whatever. What I'm saying is you're out a bunch of money. You're out $400 for a tank of gas.
No, but here's the other thing that it does is encourages rationing. So let's say that somebody is allowed to charge $20 a gallon for gas because he only has, so much in the ground. And once that's gone.
Yeah.
He's not going to be able to resell it. So he says, "Oh, I'm going to charge $20 a gallon." Well, what happens if he just sells it at a regular price? People say, "Ah, I don't know how long there's going to be before there's going to be gas again." So everybody's going to fill up.
And they fill up on it too much.
And then all the people in the back of the line, they don't get any gas. But when he's allowed to charge $20 a gallon, people say, $20 a gallon? Well, I'm only getting 2 gallons at that price.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of that, there's plenty of gas for the people at the back of the line. So
and
not
no
only
gas for the people who only had $5 in their pocket.
Well, no, they can get a quarter tank. They get a quarter tank and then drive.
It's over.
Yeah. The other thing it does. Okay,
you could also just ration it. You could say everybody only gets this much gas, and then it costs this much. You could also go that route.
Well, yeah, but that's rationing. That's what they do. That's what they do under in Soviet countries.
We rationed before. We did it all during World War II. It's not. It
yeah,
doesn't mean
but it
we're
wasn't
communists.
Right. There's a question that Roosevelt might have wanted to go that way. And here's the other thing it does. When gas is left at its normal price in a hurricane zone. So it's $2 a gallon and it's a hurricane zone. There's a hurricane coming and this place is just going to be torn to hell. Okay. It's you got a tanker truck and you're ready to sell it. And you say, well, I'm not going to go into that dang hurricane zone. I might never get out of there alive. But if all of a sudden the load that you're carrying is worth 10 times more if you're willing to risk it, people will be willing to make the risk. So not only does it encourage rationing, it also encourages more supply.
Yeah, there's all sorts of ways that markets can work and help. I think there's ways they can get out of hand, and we have to step in. I definitely think that.
And I usually have to step in when we've gone over the time limit.
I was going to bring up the example.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three today, in search for topics, Bent found an interesting article on NPR. Are gummy bears just fooling our brains?
Are they just fooling our brains? That's a good question. Maybe that's all that's wrong with this. It's just gummy bears.
According to the article, there is no such thing as gummy bear flavors. That gummy bears all taste the same. They're just different colors. And you think that because of the different colors that they taste
and
differently.
Scent. They said scent is very important also.
Apparently the Skittles Corporation realized that it's very hard to make different flavored Skittles. So Skittles has been getting away with this for years.
That's what they
apparently
said. And my wife, I told her this in the car, and she does not believe it. She said, no, There's no way that those Skittles are differently flavored.
Wow. I would have stopped right there at the and run into the gas station and picked up a pack of Skittles.
Do a blind taste test.
And
yeah.
And I would have made her do that.
Yeah.
According to the article, though, they searched out a Haribo Gold Bears Gummy Bear Products spokesperson. And Haribo, of course, is the manufacturer of the original Gummy Bear.
Yeah.
And a German corporation. And, of course, they said nine. There are five distinct flavors. Strawberry, lemon, pineapple, orange, pineapple, and raspberry.
India, as we are saying in Germany. Yeah, that's right. They claim there's five distinct flavors. And I think there is,
but you know, but that could be the German gummy bears, which people don't like.
What?
Apparently.
No, they're the best. It's the knockoffs. Now this is going back to the last conversation, but it's the generic gold gummy bears that are horrible. But the Haribo gummy bears are awesome. They're the best.
It's I love Haribo candy. Don't get me wrong. Haribo black licorice is some of the best black licorice available anywhere.
The Germans make some good candy. We've been to the factory store. Yeah,
wow.
The whole family. We came out with bags and bags of, cavities. We had so much candy.
So I don't know. So it could be the Haribo. It could be that Haribo gummy bears are five distinct flavors. And U.S. gummy bears said, you know, there's really no, you know, the way Americans eat candy, They don't really sort them.
But it's by the handful while they're watching a movie with some popcorn because they need to have every single entertainment center in their body has to be firing for them to be satisfied. I need salty, crunchy, sweet, liquid, chewy, sweet. I need a movie with people that are gorgeous that I can fantasize about having sex with. And then I need action. I need to cry. I need everything right there. That's how we are,
and do not have time to identify the individual the distinct flavor of a gummy, which is actually interesting that they have strawberry and raspberry.
Yeah,
because I know that in Jolly Ranchers that you actually, I think that strawberry is like a standard flavor, but I think you have to actually buy one of the other flavor, the more exotic flavors
raspberry?
Of Jolly Ranchers, if you want to actually get a raspberry and strawberry.
I did not know that. Yeah. I just know that I can't have Jolly Ranchers anymore because if I bite down on it, it will remove my molars. You know what I mean? If I try to open my jaw again, it would probably just rip my teeth out at this point in life. Have you ever done that?
Oh, wow.
Like you ever just gotten one in the back of your mouth? You chew down on it kind of and then it seals? No? Okay.
And it lifts up
the
cap?
Yeah, it feels like it's
going to
rip
saying?
All my old fillings out in my teeth. Yeah,
that's. I think that fear. It might not even be close,
Whoa.
But I could totally see where that fear would make you avoid
I can't
the candy because that just wouldn't. That would ruin the movie.
I think it's a valid fear for me at this point. I mean, when I was in Germany, I broke a tooth on a piece of bacon, so I think I could break it on. Anyway. We digress.
Right, again, that is German
it's
bacon.
It's a German speck.
And apparently, the soft, chewy American bacon.
Comes in the apple maple bacon and the regular. Anyway, I just find it interesting that it talks about how we're used to having multiple sensory input to form these, you know, what we think something is. And when you mess with that input at all, we become very confused. I thought it was really interesting that the college students, once they gave them clear flavored liquids, they were pretty good. But once they started mixing the message with color, it was over. They had a very hard time identifying.
Well, I know from bartending that a lot of bars do not carry ginger ale. It's
really?
it's a mixer. It's a drink mixer that has fallen out of favor of late. Is it? And what they do to make ginger, if somebody orders like a whiskey and ginger ale, What they will do is that they will give them 7-Up with a squirt of cola to kind of give it a ginger ale flavor. And they and nobody has ever said, this isn't ginger ale.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
It's
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which seems to me that ginger ale at one time I think was a staple of mixology, is that you really couldn't serve mixed drinks if you didn't have ginger ale. And now it just
I'm going to have to take your word for it, as far, you know, having grown up Mormon, that ginger ale is a staple of mixology. I would have no idea.
You don't really have as many anything to do with that C button on the soda gun though. So that isn't as popular. And if you were to give someone 7-Up with a little squirt of C, you know, that would be using bacon in a halal diner.
Yeah, now
you're
in trouble. Well, some are. I don't know.
But now I think it might not be that way, because now with the popularity of the Moscow Mule,
It's got to come back.
It's actually not even just ginger ale; it's ginger
that's
beer.
That's a big one. Ginger beer.
Surely. Bars now have to carry that, because that is the ingredient of the Moscow Mule. It's the copper mug and ginger beer are the two.
I've had one of those. Yep. I have done those. Those are tasty. But yeah.
Moscow Mule?
Tasty.
I had one for the first time like in 1992.
That's it?
I don't think I've had one since. And it's... It actually shocked, because I remember the guy had copper mugs, and I go, what are the copper mugs for? And he goes, oh, well, it's for making Moscow Mules. And I've never had one of those. I ordered one, and it was
and
interesting.
And then you asked him again, what are the copper mugs for? Again, because... No, I like them. I think they're good, but... I think it's an interesting idea that when they mess with the color, that you have a hard time identifying the taste. And of course,
I remember reading that Timothy Leary did that at one of his retreats, is that they were having a hard time. They were having a hard time keeping it within the budget. So what they would do is the food, that they would use lots of wild food coloring in the food. They would make like a fuchsia mashed potatoes and stuff like that.
And then it had two benefits. Number one,
they could say...
Because they just look at the buffet, assume they're tripping. Am I right? I assume that's what they do. We're running out of acid. Just throw weird color in the food.
And that there was a lack of appetite at the meal.
Genius.
So that people would look at it and they would say, "Why did you do that to the mashed potatoes?" And it's, well, because we're trying to change people's perception of reality. And show them how much color is involved, and you know how much instant mashed potatoes cost.
Expensive. If you make them blue, nobody wants them. Blue food's very disturbing to me. It's always disturbing. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Is that true then about Timothy Leary did that then?
I remember reading an article that he did. Yeah, yeah. Apparently, it was a. Can't remember what the article was, or if it was in a book, but apparently he did that. And apparently, we are also at the end of the segment, end of the episode. It is that is it. Thank you very much. Happy 2018, everybody. Very happy. If you want to catch all the episodes, timslegel.com. Of course, over if you want to find more about Bent.
BentWashburn.com. BENGT, just Google Bent,
and I'm pretty sure I got to check it here, but I'm pretty sure that in some of my downtime I actually set up a rule of three page.
Oh, I've got to set up a link to that from my website. Yeah,
yeah, and we got to ask people to sign on to it. And it's, I thought I did. I guess I didn't.
Good.
I did. There it is. Oh, my gosh. I'm an idiot. There's a rule of three page. Go to facebook.com/rule of number 3 podcast. not number three, just the number three rule of
three.
Three, not T-H-R-E-E. Rule of Three podcast on Facebook. Like our page. Well, all the episodes we will post there weekly. That's that. And barring any other mishaps, we'll see you next week.